In this episode of the Jolted EV podcast, we talk to Carl Chittock, owner of Bolton e-bikes in Grass Valley, California. We talk about Carl's journey, the future of e-bikes, the market for e-bikes in the US compared to the UK, and much more.
Hello and welcome to the seventh episode of the Jolted EV podcast. I'm Christian Miles.
Hi, I'm Callum Martin.
And today we've got a very special guest. We have Kyle Chittock. Kyle?
Hi, how are you doing?
Good stuff. And he's the owner of Bolton e-bikes. Now, they're based over in California in the US of A. He's produced a number of really exciting looking bikes and is here to talk about that and some other things along the way. So first of all, Kyle, do you want to give us a bit of an introduction to you?
Sure. So my name's Kyle Chittock, and believe it or not, Chittock's an English name, and I hear there's some Chittock pubs over there.
So I'll take
possibly in Bolton.
And is the name Bolton, actually, as well. So Bolton e-bikes is the name of the company. I picked that name. I'll just run with that real quick because of a few reasons. One, Bolton kind of gives a feeling of, lightning bolt electricity, like it kind of fits. But in addition to that, 1895 in the US, a guy with the last name of Bolton patented an electric bicycle. So electric bikes in some form have actually been around for like 120 some years, a long time, which is pretty crazy to think about. And then my middle name comes from my father's, which comes from somebody also with the last name Bolton in my own family history, who originally came from Bolton, England. So there's some good background history. Why is it called Bolton e-bikes and not Chittock e-bikes? You know, there's some cooler history and it's a lot easier to say and pronounce. So there you go.
Yeah. Absolutely. Okay. So it's interesting because when we first started talking about this and when you and Callan were talking, Callan said to me, a chap from a company called Bolton e-bikes, he's talking to us. Oh, great. That's fantastic. I quite like Bolton. And he said, no, not that Bolton. And I said, right, okay, so which Bolton then? He's over in the US. Right, great, even better, I love it. But I really like the fact that there is a link there from one
absolutely
to the other. And that you've taken the time to go ahead and understand some of that too.
Yes, there's always a reason for everything. It might be a crazy reason, but there's a reason.
I love it. It's great. Okay, so that's the company and that's its foundation. So what are you doing now? What are you up to under our lockdown pretense? In fact, are you guys locked down over there right now, or are you pretty free?
Yes, that's a good question. How locked down are we really?
Yes.
So thankfully we're in Grass Valley, California, which is in Northern California, which is like a totally different state and place from most of California that you probably think of. What do you think of when you think of California? This may help me to answer your question. I know it sounds weird, but it will.
Stars on the on the pavement.
Yeah,
that sort of stuff.
Okay. I guess so. I mean,
the Kardashians.
Oh dear. I can't honestly say I thought of that initially, but I can't get it out of my head now.
Okay. So, like, how? I don't know if this off the top of my head. I apologize, but like, how long is it? Do you know from like tip to tip for like your entire country?
North to south or east to west?
Either way, if you know either one, then you get an A.
What? North to south, I think something like 500 miles.
Okay, so Hollywood that you just mentioned, that's like 800-900 miles away from me.
Okay, wow. So an entire country away.
Exactly. So that hopefully, yes, I'm in California. But where we are, there's, you know, there's pine trees, there's lakes, there's mountains, you know, there's a lot of outdoor stuff. We get snow here. There's no palm trees. So where we're at is kind of in the foothills of the Sierra Nevada Mountains, which is one of the biggest mountain ranges in the world. Yeah. And right kind of in the middle of nowhere is where Bolton e-bikes is. We have people that come here. They're like, why are you here? but most of our business is online, so it doesn't really matter. I grew up here in this area. My family's been in this county for like seven generations. My kids are the eighth generation. So we have a lot of roots in history here. And so there's not really a reason to go to Hollywood or somewhere else. That actually sounds like a terrible idea to me. But what we're doing is selling electric bicycles and parts and pieces. And most of these electric bikes and parts and pieces and things are made overseas. And then there may be some final assembly or some final inspection or packaging or things that are done here in the US. For most of the bikes that I sell, we do kind of a last inspection here. We check everything and it all ships from here, from California. But we're basically taking products from overseas that some are things that I have kind of designed from the ground up. Some are more generic products, and we're trying to get electric bikes in the hands of everybody. And we ship e-bikes in particular all over the United States, North America, and smaller parts like motor controllers and things like that. We actually do ship around the world. So we send a fair amount of parts to the UK and to other parts of Europe, believe it or not.
Oh, interesting. I mean, so I did have a look at a number of your videos before coming on to here. And one of the things I noticed and really liked actually was that you are starting to put your own little sort of piece of creativity onto this. And I'm talking more things like the talk bar and the air vents and things like that. So you are considering what you can do to upgrade these bikes, aren't you?
Yes, absolutely. That's actually how I kind of started, was making like parts and pieces and upgrades. I wasn't even doing complete electric bikes. And it was a mix of things here and things from overseas. And eventually, like, people had bought enough parts to upgrade their bike that they're like, I have so many leftover parts, I could build another one. So I was like, oh, well, we should just start making electric bikes that effectively have all these upgrades already on them. And that's kind of how the Bolton e-bike line was started from there. But yeah, it's always a process of like, hey, what's going to make the bike better? You know, is that something we can do overseas? Do we need to make that modification here? And whatever we need to do to make the bike better, that's what we do.
I love it. Well, actually, I've just noticed as well, your company name is Bolton E-Bikes. And the way that you've just described it, it's very much bolt on. And so you're just missing a hyphen, really.
Yeah, but that ruins the name thing, so we don't want to.
Yeah, I guess it does, really, doesn't it? There's one story or the other. You can't have both.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, I get that. Okay, so Callan, was there anything that you wanted to ask Kyle before we sort of move on?
Intrigued, really, into how you got into e-bikes, Kyle. I was watching some of your early videos, actually, about, you know, when you had your 2015, when you had your Shopify store and everything else. But what came before that? How did you get into e-bikes at all?
It's a good question. So I grew up riding bicycles, road bikes, mountain bikes, tandem bikes, any kind of bicycle pretty much. And although e-bikes, like I mentioned about, you know, patents from the late 1800s existed, it wasn't something like readily on the market you could buy. You know, when I was a kid, I had no idea that e-bikes as a thing existed, you know, just totally out of my mind. But like most kids, I rode up riding bicycles. And for me, that was a lot of fun. It was a big part of my childhood and into high school and everything else. And as I got older, I started doing a lot of things with electronics and just building gadgets, you know, radio controlled airplanes, cars, anything like that was of interest to me. And I went through a college course called mechatronics here in Northern California, which is like mechanical engineering, electrical engineering, and computer science. And you just take those three and throw them in a jar, mix them all up at the same time. Mm-hmm. You know, so if you can imagine anything that has like a motor or an actuator or something that moves and also electrical. So we had to learn everything from like coding line by line to building circuits to building mechanical devices. And for my final project to complete, you know, that course, which took a lot of classes and, you know, a few years to do, I decided I was going to build an electric bicycle. And I actually designed and built my own bicycle. I took a road bike that I had and converted it by adding my own motor to it, lithium batteries, because most of the batteries were kind of like heavy and lead acid. And I was like, oh, I think there's a better way to do this. And the professor was like, oh, this is a very ambitious project, kind of like almost discouraging me from trying it. Like, kind of like, good luck. You're probably going to fail now.
good old professor, but, always supportive.
Exactly. But thankfully it worked. I had to physically make the circuit boards, you know, write the code to make it work. I mean, it was a big project, but the electronics of it worked and I got an A in the class. So, that was my very first electric bike, was one that I built from scratch. And I didn't do anything with it as far as a business or anything at that point in time. You know, I was just finishing up college, you know, had a job, wasn't really sure what I was going to do at that point, you know, kind of working in the tech industry to some degree. But a few years later, I saw some electric bikes online for a price that seemed too cheap to be any good. So naturally, I bought a couple of
them. As you do, of course.
Happened, I went ahead and got the bikes. They actually turned out to be okay for the price, but immediately, you know, I started modifying them because I was like, oh, I see improvements we can make to these. And then other people online were talking about improvements, what can they do, and it just kind of spiraled downhill from there.
It was almost like just a natural progression, wasn't it, from
it, sort of it really bike. Was
You know, it's sort of like monkey to man, you know, like that sort of progression where it was like a basic bike and then it just sort of flowed into you know, the great electric bikes that you're making now.
So out of interest, Kyle, did you keep the project bike?
I did not. I wish that I did, because if I still had it today, I'd probably like hang it up on the wall or something,
yeah,
just for the fun of it, to be like, that's what I built all those years ago, and, you know, it worked. But unfortunately, I did not. I, being the tinkerer type of person that I am, I know that, you know, I ripped a part off to make this, I ripped another part off to make that,
yeah,
and, you know, and eventually it disappeared.
Oh, what a shame. Okay, well, I'd have loved to have seen some pictures. I don't know whether you have any, but if you do, please send them over, because that's very, very
unfortunately, interesting. Yeah, I don't even have pictures of it anymore. It just it doesn't exist.
What
such
shame.
A disappointment.
Yeah, yeah. Hey ho. we all survive. So going forward then, what's exciting for you about the future of not just e-bikes but micromobility in general?
Well, it's interesting because, as I'm sure you guys have talked about a lot, you know, electric vehicles are starting to become mainstream. You know, it's not like it was a few years ago where, yeah, there were one or two cars you could get, but barely anyone had them. They weren't charging stations. Like, that's all changing to where now the average person is probably maybe considered it or thought about it, whereas a few years ago that wasn't the case, right? And electric bikes are, in my mind, a much easier transition than going from, you know, like a gas car to an electric car. It's so much simpler because when you take something that's not powered by anything but your own legs and you add the motor to it, it's instantly more fun. There's no downside. They're not trading, you know, electricity for petrol or trying to do anything weird. It's just, they hop on it and they're like, wow, this is like a bicycle I remember riding when I was younger, because most of my customers are 60 years old and up, but they're like, I can do this. It's easy. It's fun again. And it's like you're adding, you know, youth to their lives by putting them on an electric bike. And that's why they sell themselves. To me, like, once they see that, then they start using it for, you know, running to the grocery store, running errands around town, going to their friend's house on the other side of town. They don't start by thinking, oh, I need a better, more efficient commuter vehicle. Like, that's that's not at all what it is. It's they want something to get outside and have fun, and then they start using it to do the commuting and the things that people want people to use electric bikes for. It's kind of the opposite. That's what they end up doing, but they start out on it just because it's a lot of fun, and who doesn't want to do something that's fun?
There also seems to be quite a big use case for people doing like mountain biking and stuff like that as well. I've seen a lot of that with e-bikes, especially people that I know that own e-bikes. They tend to do a lot of like, you know, the tough stuff that would be really tough on a regular mountain bike. They can now do with ease and actually enjoy it rather than, you know, absolutely out of breath after like 10 minutes. And you know, now they can enjoy the view when they get to the top rather than thinking they're going to die. So,
it's been really interesting.
Or having to call an ambulance to take them back.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, it's been really interesting to watch the transition from like professional, you know, bike riders that are into racing. And that first few years ago, it's like, oh, I'm not getting on the e-bike. You know, I'm losing the exercise and the effort. And now it's like, oh, I'm on an off day. I still want to get in some training. I want to go ride these specific trails, work on my techniques, and they can go for a ride and get in, build more skills, still get exercise, but not kill themselves for the race the next day or their training day the next day. And it's interesting to see that now they're really adopting these quite heavily, it looks like, to use in addition to their pedal bikes, just side by side.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting, actually, from a competitive place, because that's probably the first time I heard about e-bikes, realistically, was about 10 years ago, I think. And it was because it was in the news because some professional racers had hidden a motor and some batteries in their frame. And it wasn't providing a lot, but it was providing just that little more so that for the last 10Ks, they had 30% more energy in their tank because actually they'd not really been pedaling at all. And it kicked up a huge fuss. And I thought, God, you can actually do that. That's a real thing. You know, you can find these things so small that you can hide it inside the frame, the tubular frame of this bike. And like I said, it's nothing like today's standard of power or battery life, but they were doing it back then. And at the time, God, that's the future. You know, that absolutely is the future. And I suppose, in a way, it really is, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it is. The adoption is just happening so quickly. And like I said, it's a very easy transition. It's not like you're giving up your, you know, gas-powered, petrol-powered vehicle in exchange for an electric one. It's just, oh, it's a bicycle, but it's one that I'll use.
And there also isn't that, you know, that cost differential between it so much. Like mountain bikes can cost you £3,000 or £4,000, and e-bikes are not that different to a regular bike, but it makes it much easier.
That's $6,000 or $7,000
Many people are surprised. They're like, wait, I can buy an e-bike for about the same price as I would buy a pedal bike? Like, why does this even make sense? How is this even possible? But that's realistically how it is right now. There's so many out now. You can really make a decision between, oh, I could buy a pedal bike or an electric bike, you know, for the same price. It's you're right. There's no price differential. It's not like you're having to spend 2-3 times as much to get one.
I realize this is massively subjective depending on how hard you pedal and what settings you put it on, but presumably over the last 5 or 6 years you've seen a pretty good increase in range, and I mean sort of mile range, you know, how many miles you can get out of these things. Do you think that has affected people's decision making as well, because they can use it now as more of a commuter bike rather than just a, you know, 3 or 4 mile pedal?
I definitely do think so. I think if an e-bike had a range of, you know, 5 miles, maybe even 10 miles, it's not enough. You know, people want to go, they want to know that they can go to the store that's 3-4 miles down the street and down to the beach or wherever and back to their house and not have to worry about, are they going to make it or not? And when you have a range of 30, 40 miles and they can be like, oh yeah, I can do that. You know, most people, even on e-bikes, I find aren't usually going much more than 20, 30 miles. By then, they get tired of sitting on the saddle before the battery runs out. You know, there's other limits at play. So I look forward to the time when we have e-bikes that have a range that's just so good. And some of them, I think, are even there today, where you could literally ride it around all day and never kill the battery, no matter how hard you try. And we're pushing that on certain bikes now. But I think that that's just going to get even better, because then it's the range anxiety is like the big holdup for electric cars. Like, people are worried, like, oh, well, I can't drive 500 miles.
About that lots.
Exactly. And it's like, but when do you actually drive 500 miles? You know, you know how that exchange goes. But for e-bikes, it's like, they know, oh, I'm not going to go ride 100 miles. Like, they would never think of doing that. That'd be pretty rare. You know, so it's really interesting. The range is definitely getting better, constantly on our models. As new models come out, we're just slowly creeping up the battery capacities, because people always want the biggest battery capacity. I've done an experiment on that on my website. I put up a specific model with two different battery sizes and let people choose which one when they check out. You know, obviously there's a fee for the more expensive battery. And I did that for like a couple of weeks, and like 99% of the people chose the bigger battery.
Really?
You know.
And do you think they understood the difference in range?
Yes. Yeah, they knew that the bigger one was going to get them further. So it was kind of like, oh yeah, if I'm going to spend, you know, $2,000, I'll spend $2,200 if I know that one's going to go a little further. The jump to spend a little more to go further is kind of like the easiest decision for them in the world. It's kind of a no-brainer. They always want to go further, and they'll never turn that down.
I like the fact, though, that you then took that decision away, because actually, there's no point in not, is there? And giving them too much options. And you could have then capitalized on that, I guess, and then said, actually, I'm going to give you 25 different options, some of which are going to cost $20,000, and you need to tow a trailer behind you, because there's that many of these things now.
You could get to an extreme if you wanted to.
Exactly. You know, and actually, I don't really like that, because it's capitalization at its worst. Mm. And you know, the fact that you've taken that happy medium and said, right, you know, this is where most people sit, and this is what they're happy with. So let's go with that. That's really positive for me. It's a really, really good thing. Okay, so a couple of other questions then. Over here, we have fairly stringent limits. Now, I'm hoping the fact that, and just as a caveat for anyone listening, I was a Remainer, not a Brexiter, but I'm trying to make the best of it. And now that we've exited the European Union and the laws governing that, I'm hoping that they change and update this. But e-bikes over here have to have they have a maximum of 250 watts of power.
Right. I'm
sorry. I know. What an ass. And at a maximum of 15.2, I think it is, miles per hour. You have to pedal in order for the controller to be able to then provide help. So you can't have it as an automatic, let's go, here's a switch. It has to be pedal start. What's it like over there for that? You know, because I think, again, this is one of the reasons why you guys are absolutely creaming it over there and doing so well with innovation, because you're not stifled by all of this.
Yeah, I mean, obviously we have limits as well, but they are quite a bit higher. So our legal limit on the road to still be considered a bicycle, and that means you don't have to, you know, have a license or registration or anything. It's just a bicycle. Anybody can hop on one and go ride it around. The legal limit is 750 watts.
Oh, wow.
So we can get
three times
as much power. And then there's some speed limits. And every state can kind of set their own rules governing that a little bit more. But most are adopting basically this class system where you have a class one bike, a class two, a class three, and all of them have that same 750 watt maximum. And this is one of those funny things where I'm like, then why in the US do we even have 250 watt, 500 watt e-bikes? 750 watts is allowed everywhere. Just make them all 750 watts.
Yeah.
Nobody's going to be like, no, I don't want that bike. It actually can go. It actually has more power than I want. You know, that nobody says that. And then our speed limits are 20 miles an hour for class one and class two. So we get to go a little bit faster with the motor power. And the class two bike can have a throttle, so you don't even have to pedal if you don't want to.
Interesting.
And so that's pretty cool. And then if you want to go even a little faster than that, the class three has a maximum speed of 28 miles per hour. So that's a pretty substantial jump in speed from what you can get over there.
So what's the age restrictions and things on that?
What are those differences? Yeah.
I think, and because most of my customers are over age of 60, I don't talk about this too often.
Do they have to have a pension book in order to qualify?
Right. I think the regulations, there might be like a 16 and over or something to legally ride it. I know there's, in California, there's helmet laws. So if you're, you know, 16 to 18 years old and you're on an e-bike, you can legally ride it as a bicycle, but you have to wear a helmet. Whereas if you're older than that, then there's no helmet restrictions or anything. You're kind of free to kill yourself however you'd like. Beyond that point.
At 28 miles an hour.
Yeah, exactly. So those are the legal limits on the road. And then as far as actually like importing or selling bikes, this is where it's interesting. People will notice if they go to my website, I have some bikes that say they're 1,000 watts, you know, maybe peak 1,500 watts. And they're like, oh, well, that's not legal. And I'm like, well, it's legal to own it. It's legal for me to sell it. It's legal for you to buy it. And it's legal for you to ride it off-road if you'd like. No, it's not legal on road or on bike paths. And if you happen to use it there, that's your choice. But off-road everywhere else, yeah, it's perfectly legal to do whatever you want with it. So,
but if you had a motorcycle license or something like that, could you ride that on the road then?
Well, it's not registered, is it? So probably not.
Oh, so you don't. Okay.
Yeah, that's where it gets complicated. That's a common question. People say, well, can I get a 5,000-watt e-bike and just register it? Mm. And that really depends on state laws. And with all the 50 states, you know, it could be all over the place what the rules are. But in most cases, because it's not like a Department of Transportation-approved vehicle with a VIN number and tires and license plate holder and lights and turn signal, all that stuff, you can't really register it as a motorcycle either. So you're just kind of in this no man's land of use at your own risk at that point. And there's people that do it. I mean, I've certainly seen the videos and things online.
I think we all have, yeah.
Exactly.
50 miles per hour.
I think the only video I've seen where somebody was actually pulled over on something like that and gotten a ticket or had their bike taken away was in the UK. So.
Oh, more than likely, yeah. Hey, look, we can walk faster than these bikes are allowed to go. So it's pretty obvious if you're on something too fast.
So there's some bikes that they sell here in the US, and they sell the same exact models over there and where you guys are at. And the models that you get are software restricted to those limits.
Yeah.
So I make upgrade motor controllers and displays that work on the US bikes. So people have more flexibility on the programming and changing speed limits. And some of those things just happen to work on the UK versions of the bike too. And people may buy those. And, you know, I assume they're setting the speed limits appropriately when they do that.
Well, of course, we're very sensible here in the UK. As I'm sure you've heard, we have a reputation for that, Carl. Okay, fine. So, well, in that case, then we'll make sure we include a link to the UK products of UK interest, should we call it?
There we go. Yeah, there's a big company here in the US, and they're, you know, globally to some degree called Rad Power, and I make some upgrade parts for those bikes, and they do sell those over there at the 250 watt limit. in theory, if you were off-road on your own property and you chose to install one of these new controllers that I've got, you know, the bike is capable of like 1500 watts, but you wouldn't do that on the road.
No, of course not. No. But that does raise the question, actually, or beg the question. So for the 1,000-watt bikes that you have over in the US, and maybe the rules are slightly different over there, but can you not limit them to 750 watts of output so that they can be used on the road? And could you then, for instance, provide a flip switch that allowed them to then go off-road if they so chose? Is that even an option?
Yes, most of the bikes that I sell that are more powerful, it's very easy to limit the power and the speed down. So you can easily just go on the screen that's on the handlebars and you can put in a 20 mile an hour speed limit. And then I even have stickers and labels, because in California, the law is that your bike is supposed to have a sticker that says what class it is. So if law enforcement actually knew what the classes mean, which to be honest, they don't yet, but if they did, they could look at the sticker and be like, oh yeah, that's a legal bike. But the law says that if you modify or you change your e-bike, which is totally legal and allowed to do, you just have to change the sticker appropriately. So I actually sell stickers, so you could buy a 1,000-watt bike, limit it down to 20 miles an hour, put the appropriate sticker based on the restrictions you've set, and then you're all good to go.
Fantastic. Yeah, I like that. That's great. Okay, well, so then, I mean, I'm not going to do to death because you've got lots of videos advising on. And let me just say, I watched your video of you assembling, I think it was the Blackbird.
Okay.
And it was absolutely superb. And I'm not building you up because you're on the show or otherwise. It was genuinely, it was genuinely a really informative video that took the time to look at some of the nuances that perhaps you wouldn't understand or get in, say, for instance, a paper manual.
Yeah, I really focus on the video part of everything. I mean, and the reason for that is because the YouTube channel for me has really grown quite fast, and that's how most people find me. So it just seems logical that I should provide more videos to help answer their questions beyond that. So it's funny, we get some, probably the opposite complaint of some companies. Sometimes people are like, oh, don't you have a paper manual for this or that? And I'm like, no, but I have a great video. Here you go.
That's brilliant. I love that. So with all these, you know, all the bikes and things that you've seen and reviewed, Kyle, what's the worst one that you've tried?
We're going down and dirty now. Come on. give us the dirt. Come on.
I've seen one video, but I was just wondering now.
Okay. I might know what video you're referring to. And so to address that video, you can tell me if I'm wrong and I missed something. How do I put this politely?
Don't.
So there are some e-bike channels and things out there that review bikes, and they basically have a business model where you pay them a certain amount of money, they review the bike. That's how most reviews are done for electric bikes online. I have never paid anyone for a review of one of my bikes, and I never will. I also will not accept payment to review someone else's bike. That's just something I've decided to do. I feel like it's really hard to be unbiased when somebody's paying you for the review, because then if you do a bad one, then is the next company going to pay you for another review? So I've had
there's not a single credible bought review on the internet.
Right. So I do have some reviews on my channel, and I'm going to do another one live on my YouTube channel today, you know, and there's two ways in which that happens. One is I personally bought and paid for the bike because it was popular and I thought about buying it to upgrade, you know, parts and pieces, and maybe there's a market to kind of help support it. Or maybe I just genuinely was interested in the bike and I wanted to see one and I ordered one. So I've bought quite a few bikes from competing e-bike companies for that reason. Also sometimes companies will reach out to me and say, hey, will you review our bike? And I'm like, yeah, I'll review it. but you can't pay me for it. Ideally, if you'll allow me, I would ask that you just let me give it away to somebody randomly that watches my YouTube channel. And then you get more exposure, everybody's happy, and I don't get anything for it. And I actually had someone request a review from me. I did this bike review a couple months back, and they had like a contract that said in the contract that you will not say anything negative about our bike in your review. And I said, I'm not agreeing to that. You can take that out or I won't do it. And they took it out because I said, I've never seen your bike. I have no idea if I'm going to say something negative or not. I might.
Yeah.
Wow.
It turns out that bike, you know, I liked, though. I actually was positive about it. But it was an honest opinion. There was one bike from a company called Mate that I wasn't as pleased with. I paid for that one. I bought it. You know, it didn't matter if I released a video or not. But I said, hey, I got it. Let's pull it out. Let's do a review. Had no idea what to expect overall. But it just wasn't great. You know, it was way behind schedule. And right now, this year and last year, electric bikes are way behind schedule. Demand globally is just massive. And the factories cannot keep up. Right now, Shimano, which if you know anything about e-bikes, you know, you might recognize that name on shifters and brakes and derailleurs on like they have a huge cap, you know, market cap for just bicycle components in general. And their lead time is out till August of 2022 right now for parts.
Jeez.
So like a year and a half out, right? But a couple years ago, that wasn't the case. You know, things were like 2-3 months usually. And when I ordered the Mate bike, I think they advertised that it was coming in like a 3-4 month time frame. It was a crowdfunding campaign, you know, so I had to wait a few months. That's fine, you know. Mm-hmm. I think it took like 18 months for me to receive mine. And, and it was like, whoa. And that alone didn't bother me. I know a lot of people have problems with that. Like, you know, is the bike even going to show up, you know? That was obviously reason for concern when it's delayed by more than a year. That's pretty extreme. Mm. But what I didn't like was that constantly I was seeing ads go out from their company that were like, pre-order the bike, get delivery next month. And it was like, I've been eating 18 months and I haven't seen anything. There is no way you're delivering a bike to somebody who orders today next month. It's just they knew that couldn't be true and they were still pushing it. And that kind of put a bad taste in my mouth, if you will. But then there were a couple other quality issues that popped up. Somebody early on that got one of the bikes opened the battery up and found out they used different cells than advertised, which if you're having trouble getting parts, that alone is kind of like, yeah, you know, I could accept different cells if that's all they had available. But it wasn't just that they're different cells. They were actually a lower capacity. So the battery was smaller inside than the label on the outside. And that's not okay. Like, so, you know, so it was a lot of little things that were just like, you know, this is a bad deal. I wouldn't buy from a company that's operating this way. You know, they're just not being upfront and they're just trying to sell as many of these things and get in and get out, I think, as quick as they can. And if they're going to have a long-term lasting brand, that's not the way to do it, you know? So are they going to be around in 2-3 years? I doubt it. You know, mm-hmm. if that's how they're going to run the business, they're going to be gone. So I hate to, you know, say something negative, but since you asked the question, that was a bike.
No, I think to be honest, you were quite, and I read the comments as well, on that video. And I think to be honest, you know, you're just giving your opinion and when you put yourself out there, then. You know, sometimes you do get those things, but you know, it was just your opinion.
Exactly. And part of the reason I wanted to release the review was because I'd never seen a bad e-bike review on the internet. So I figured, why don't I be the first? This will be fun.
Yeah. I love the authenticity, Carl. So yeah, I think it's brilliant.
And to be fair, I think that was probably the most diplomatic slamming of a company I've ever heard. You were still being very kind for what was clearly a pretty rough experience.
Well, moving on from the worst one then, let's do a bit of an easier one. What's the best one you've ever tried?
Oh, well, of course, there's this company in Grass Valley, California called
Bolton. Oh, yeah.
In the Sierra Nevada Valley. Is that kind of where it is? Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. Apart from that one.
No, there are a lot of great bikes out there. There's a company called the Electric Bike Company. I know that's really generic, but hey, whatever works. But they have some great bikes. I've reviewed a couple of theirs, and the quality, the packaging is all good. You got to spend a little bit more on their brand, but I feel like it's worth what they charge for the quality they deliver. And there's a lot of other ones out there. There's a company called Ride One Up, which I've had a lot of people ask about. The prices seem very reasonable. The quality looks pretty good. I just had a conversation with the owner of that company, and I've got a bike sitting here in a box. I'm going to pull out hopefully today and get a first look at it. And it may be something that kind of over delivers based on the price point. And so I'm excited to see how that one looks. And I've also, in addition to my own bikes, occasionally I will carry another brand of electric bicycle if it makes sense. If it's something different than what I carry, if I get along with the owners of the company and their philosophies and the quality they want to deliver. So Bike Trix is a company that's based in Canada that I've started carrying some of their models because they seem like they're very reasonably priced and work well. So I'm very, how do I put this again? I'm not competitive or worried about the competition, if that makes sense. I
That
am
makes
more than
total
willing
sense, yeah.
to I'm more than willing to talk to other e-bike companies, talk about them, have them as a guest on my own podcast. I've done that before because I think the more people know about electric bikes in general, the more people are going to buy them and get what they want and have a good experience. And that's going to reflect well on everybody. If some
Absolutely.
company comes out and sells a million electric bikes and they're junk, then everybody's going to hate electric bikes, and I don't want that.
Okay, so your bikes then, best. I won't ask you to do the worst, but give us your top pick for the bikes that you currently have and have played with, used, and are available.
So you had mentioned an unboxing or setup video for the Blackbird,
Yes.
and that is a bike that is kind of a culmination or a natural evolution of bikes that I've been building over the last 5 years. So I started with a fat bike, with a rear hub motor that wasn't as powerful. We made it more powerful. Then we put better brakes on. And this is over a few years of a time period. And the bike just slowly kept getting better and better. And at first I was building those, by hand, by myself, one at a time, custom for each person.
Good Lord.
And eventually it got to the point where it's like, okay, I can't do that anymore. I need bikes made in bulk somewhere else because I cannot build these fast enough. I can't work this many hours. I'm going to die young. I don't want to do that. But eventually it kind of led to the Bolton e-bikes Blackbird, which I basically came to it. I was like, all right, now we've been selling them long enough. I know what everybody wants. They want the most powerful motor they can get. That is 750 watts and legal to use everywhere. They want a big battery. They want a nice color display. They want good hydraulic brakes. Like, just kind of went down the list of everything a customer would want and then tried to put all of those things into one bike and then even add a few surprises that no one has ever done on an e-bike because I like to do things differently. And so the Blackbird has been selling really well. We keep releasing pre-order batches and they keep selling out before I can actually get the bikes here.
Wow.
And that's been a really big driver of traffic and sales for us is that particular bike. But it took a few years basically to develop and create that bike the way it sold now. But it's basically an aggressive looking fat bike, and it just has all the options people ask for. And when it comes down to the options, like we talked about the batteries earlier, that was one of the hard decisions I had to make was how do we produce this in bulk quickly? And it was like, well, you reduce the options as much as possible. So customers want fenders. We don't make it an option. It comes with fenders. they want a rear rack, it's not an option. It comes with it. You know, every option you could think of, it just comes standard. You can't not get it that way. And then because it's the Blackbird, it's available in the lovely colors of black and black.
Lots of shades of black. I love it.
Yes.
And but to be fair, I think one of the standouts on that bike is its price point.
Right. I wanted to deliver like an extremely good bike without charging a ridiculous price for it. So it's more expensive than some e-bikes. You know, you can spend less for sure, but to find the components on that bike for that price is going to be extremely hard to do. In fact, I don't even know of one that could match all the components and specs that it has for that price.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and so it's excellent. Just to be clear, I really like it. I hadn't thought of an e-bike personally. I ride a motorbike, so it kind of doesn't really work for me, but I'm coming around to it. I have to be honest, you know, having spoken to you, having looked around, having seen some of your videos as well, I'm thinking, actually, you know what? That's pretty ideal for me, to be fair, for perhaps 80% of all of my journeys. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a relatively small number of journeys that I just couldn't do on an e-bike. It wouldn't be practical or possible. But there's a lot of things that I could now do, particularly with the range, the styles, and otherwise. I think I'd need a much nicer seat. I'd need the cheetah seat.
Yes, big comfy cruiser style seat.
Absolutely, yeah. That would suit me perfectly on the Blackbird. So I know you're saying I can't have an option, but I'd like a Blackbird with a cheetah seat, please. that's the only change that I would make. So what do you see for the future then? I mean, for the future for you, the future for e-bikes in general. I mean, do you want to design and develop a bike in the US, I suppose I'm getting at, or do you feel that the market is asking for what you're providing?
It's a very interesting question. And
it's a difficult one, I realize. Yeah.
Well, it's something I've thought about a lot. And here's my philosophy on it, if you will. There are a certain number of people that have a patriotic nature for their country, and they want things that are made where they live, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's always true to a certain degree everywhere, I think. So there's some people that would love to see a bike that is just strictly made in the USA, just for the support of supporting local manufacturing and businesses and things like that. But I'm going to be honest and say that 98%, I just made that number up, but based on the customers I've got, 98% of the people, 99, maybe more, could care less. And the reason and the reason I can confidently say that is you just ask them what kind of phone they have in their pocket and where was it made. You know, that it's probably an iPhone made in China or an Android.
Designed in California there, young man.
Exactly, designed in California. That's right.
Yeah.
You know, but you get the point, is when it comes Absolutely. Down to, are they actually willing to spend substantially more for a made in the USA product? No, I don't think they are. Would they spend a little bit more for a US product if it was better than a product from overseas? Well, if it was better, then it doesn't matter where it was made. They might consider buying it, right? Like that's kind of a no-brainer. Mm-hmm. So right now, with like the lead times I mentioned being a year and a half out, my thought is, if I can develop some parts or pieces in the US and make them here, I literally have like a year to develop some new parts and get them to market and still be 6 months ahead of the Asian market on making parts and pieces. And because I'm selling bikes and I need those parts, there is obviously a motivation to look into that.
Mm.
But I don't want to make things here just for the sake of making it here. I don't think that's going to drive the market to buy it just that it's made here alone. I think it needs to be better. So I think I need to take each piece, each part, component that goes into a bike. And if I'm going to make it here, I have to have a reason why we chose to make it here and what makes it better than what you can already get. And then it makes sense. Now that increases the difficulty of doing it, because that means we have to kind of scrap everything about we know about electric bikes and throw it out the window and start from scratch. But I think the end result is we could have something that just totally blows everything else away in a year or two time. And you could actually get and purchase, and it's not, you know, months lead time. So who knows what's going to happen. But that's my thoughts. That's my philosophy. And I do spend a fair amount of time researching and prototyping and trying to figure out if it's something that's even possible. Because right now there's most of the parts you need for a bicycle, let alone an electric bike, just are not an option in the US. They literally don't exist.
Wow. Well, that's what I was going to ask, actually, because in the UK at the moment, and it's been brought on mainly by Brexit, and I'm not going to mention that word again because it's a dirty word. There seems to be a resurgence of patriotism for sure, but actually
sure.
An identification that we had weakened our position, not just globally, but also locally, in not having those skills or that capacity internally. So at the moment there's a lot of talk about how we bring back some of that import economy and perhaps turn it into an export economy, but most importantly utilize local supply and local manufacturing so that we're not as exposed to the changes that are happening globally. And right. I suppose I wanted to get a sense from you, and I realize that this is just a fag packet sense, you know, it's not you're certainly not looking at the bigger picture in the US. I realize that, but are you seeing any of that? Are you talking to people? Is it happening?
I think for a lot of people, they're thinking about it. I don't think most people are going to do anything about it. I hate to say that, but I think that's the reality of it. I think for me, the effect is so obvious on, you know, electric bikes and other industries, because it's not just e-bikes. It's I've talked to people that do, you know, outdoor sporting goods sales, you know, whether it's boats or tractors or anything like that. They're all sold out, not available, long lead times. And a big part of that is just, you know, the effects of what happened over the last year or so and the changes people have made in their lives, and they want to be outdoors more, and sometimes they even have more time to do that because they're not going into a job every day, or they're working from home. You know, the world has changed a little bit, and that's driven the demand. But all of a sudden, we've realized that we can't keep up when the demand changes, because we are relying on what's happening globally to make our product. I know, just talking to somebody the other day about, you know, tractors, for example, not e-bikes related at all, but they were having trouble getting tractors in the US right now because there's not enough tires. And it's like, well, why can't they make tires? Where's the rubber going? You know, it's a chain of events that kind of breaks down. And I think, you know, where you're at, if you could have something that you can make locally, yeah, it gives you more independence, and I think people, when they do something like that, I think they will be proud that they have come up and developed something and that they make it. I think there's something to be said that, you know, humans make things, and it's just part of our nature and what we do, and when we stop making things, then I don't think it's as fulfilling. Maybe I'm getting a little too philosophical there, but, you know, that's...
you are talking my language, to be fair. I think you're absolutely right. You know, we are designed to make things. We're designed to improve things. You know, it's in our DNA. And since stopping doing that, I loosely compare the UK with the US because they're a similar Western economy. But over here, we have almost wholesale exported our manufacturing to the Far East. You know, there's very few things now in the UK that we wholly or solely manufacture. So we're either sourcing parts to assemble in the UK, and that's okay. You know, it's maintaining a number of skill sets, but we're still importing those initial parts. into the UK, or we're skipping that process entirely and we're just importing wholesale from the Far East. And that worries me a little bit because, you know, we had a pretty long history of strong manufacturing in this country, as of course the US did and does as well. And I feel that fading a little, you know, and how do we bring that back? And that's one of the important factors for me, I guess, is making sure that we still have those skills within the country to ensure that when we do finally come full circle, there is the skill available to do it.
Yeah, it's a scary thought to think that a lot of people don't know how to work with their hands or make or develop things. And I would certainly love to see more of that come back. And it, you know, it's just something to be proud of that you've developed or made something and you can do it. You know, it's a competitive global market, so sometimes that makes it really hard to do. And for electric bikes, you know, right now, today, you know, could I make an e-bike today that can compete with something from China? No. You know, on price, like, that's where I said we have to kind of put everything aside and start over from scratch to try and compete with that. I think it's possible, but it's not easy. And if it was easy, then somebody would have done it already.
Would it be possible to build it solely in the US, Kyle, do you feel? Do you feel you've got all the components in the US being made in the US to even do it? Or...
Today, yeah, so from a supply chain perspective.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
I mean, to just like go to companies in the US and buy parts and pieces and assemble an electric bike today is not possible.
Right.
Derailleurs. There's no one in the US manufacturing tires. Some can find, there's people building frames. You know, they're really expensive, but there's people doing it. You know, there's people making handlebars and seat posts, and a lot of it's kind of like the custom, like higher end market for mountain biking and road biking, things like that. Doing it for more affordable bikes. That is kind of just completely missing and needs to be started up or brought back or something, but it doesn't. No, it's not possible. Not all of them exist.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because I suppose what China, and I refer to China, but it could be in any other country, really. But what they have is buying power at the moment, isn't it? Or selling power. You know, their factories are selling not just to you, but to lots of other people, which reduces their overhead and cost per unit sufficient that they can work on very low margins, which, as you know, if you're just starting out, you just can't do that. You know, it's a margin game. It's not a volume game. All right. So I totally get the cyclical problem that sits with that. It's something though that I think we're going to see talked about more.
I think
as we go through the next 10 years.
Yeah, I think at least the discussion is going to happen. And for me, like I said, the real motivation is, you know, if I can't get bikes from overseas, then that kind of affects my business of selling bikes. So,
absolutely.
You know, so do I, you know, and I'm not relying on the fact that I'm going to make things here to make the business stay alive. I'm pre-ordering components a year in advance to make sure I have them for the Blackbird and other models so that I've got the parts and pieces so we can make the bikes. And that stretches things out. It's pretty crazy to try and, you know, manage cash flow in a business when you're pre-ordering things a year ahead of time or more. but that's what we're doing to survive right now. And I, you know, just have to look at that and think, well, wouldn't it solve the problem if we made it here? So yeah, it's a big discussion, at least here at Bolton E-Bikes. It's something that we're looking into. I would be very interested to find out if there's other e-bike or micro mobility companies in the US that are thinking the same things, you know, or
that's where I was getting at really, Kyle.
Or maybe somebody where you're at is thinking about doing it. And then we can export parts from the US to you or from you to the US, you know, and then it, you know, it gives us another option outside of the Asian manufacturing, which they're really good at what they do. I mean, when I first started making or selling e-bikes, people are like, oh, they're made in China. Is the quality good? And I'm like, well, was it 2016 or something? I think the U.S. had sold like 100,000 bicycles or electric bicycles or somewhere in that neighborhood. And, you know, Asia, the bike sales for electric bikes was like 30 million. I was like, yeah, they know what they're doing more than we do. you know, we got some catching up to do if we're going to try and meet that. But it's a challenging problem for sure.
Oh, speaking of collaborations, actually, and this was pure coincidence. I was speaking to a chap actually in Scotland, not in England, but he has developed a motor. You may have heard of him, actually. I'm racking my brains now to think of his name. Apologies if you hear this podcast. I don't remember your name, but I will find it in a moment.
Is it Edward? I can't remember. Edward Springs.
I think it's Edward. I think it's Mark, actually. But it's irrelevant of his name just right now.
But he developed a motor there.
So he's developed a motor that has an integral 8-speed gearbox.
Ah, awesome.
Yeah, very, very cool. And so the control unit allows you to change the gears rather than you having a Shimano, for instance, externally. So you don't need it. So that gearbox works with pedal power, and the assistive function then from the motor works alongside that gearbox. And I think his issue was very similar to yours, you know, supply, but also he didn't want to have a rear hub motor as well as gear system. So he created a mid-drive motor that has the gears integrated.
Yeah, I think that is awesome because that's, to me, those are the kind of solutions that we need. And I don't remember the name of the bike. I think I may have seen what you're talking about. But what he had to do was think about, well, here's a bicycle. We basically took bicycles and then we started adding motors to them. But electric bikes are kind of a whole different thing. And what nobody has really done is just redesigned it as an e-bike from the get-go and kind of ditched the bicycle parts. It sounds like he has done that to some degree, and I think that's the direction we got to go to just make better electric bikes. And if we're making something that's, you know, like I said, better than overseas, then people might be willing to pay a little bit more for it, and then everybody's happy.
Absolutely, yeah. His name, just so that I cover this off, his name's Mark Revilius.
Oh, you remember the Mark bit then?
Yeah, I thought it was Mark. Yeah, I know. Well, I did very well there because my naming is terrible. So
there you go.
I was quite impressed, actually. Mark Revilius, company called Intradrive Limited. I have absolutely no affiliation with them whatsoever. But I did speak to Mark, and he's a really interesting guy, very innovative, very technically minded. And he's the sort of guy that would definitely, because I think he has the same issue. In fact, I know he has very much the same issue right now. I don't think he'd mind me talking about this, although I won't go into any great details, but he's at a point now where he's considering, do I set up to build these bikes, or do I sell the technology to an external, or do I go and get them built over in the Far East? And he is literally at that point right now.
Yeah, it's a big decision.
And I think, a huge decision, absolutely. But I think actually, if he was faced with some alternatives that may be credible, and I think he can only get to that space by collaborating with people like you, Kyle.
Right.
Then actually, the collaborative nature of that may work rather than you guys all trying to do it individually and separately, because the market demand is there.
Yeah.
But together, you know, you naturally have a much broader sense for all of this.
Yeah, that's the thing I have been thinking about too lately is if I try and do this all on my own, am I going to be able to develop a new type of e-bike from scratch in a year or two? That's probably stretching it, right? That's probably not likely.
It's difficult.
Yeah. Could I develop a new type of braking system that is better for electric bikes in a year? Probably. But what if we have a collaborative system where you have, you know, guys like Mark who are working on a drive system, somebody else is working on brakes, somebody else is working on a battery. And then I don't think this idea is so far-fetched. Then I think it's actually within reach and it can be done. But you're right. I mean, we were all doing different things individually. it's going to be really difficult to kind of reinvent the wheel, quite literally, and make this work.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Interesting. Well, look, after the show, if you want me to give you his details, I have no doubt that he'd be more than happy to have a conversation with you.
Sounds great.
That kind of guy. So, good, good, good. Okay, well, look, I think we're, well, I'm running out of time now, unfortunately, so we may have to cut this one a little bit shorter than I'd like to, because quite frankly, I would love to speak to you for much longer, and I'd like to have you back on at some point, Kyle, if you don't mind.
That'd be great.
Fantastic. Callan, was there anything else you wanted to squeeze out of Kyle before we go?
Well, yeah, that's a sort of a parting question, Kyle, and sticking with things that are on two wheels. I'd just be interested, have you ever tried an e-motorcycle in the US? I know Zero Motorcycles are a big company in the US. Have you ever tried one?
I have here. There's a company called Ubco, which makes kind of like a moped thing. I think they have dealers where you are as well, so you could check those out.
Interesting.
I have one of those here in my shop and just signed up to be a dealer and kind of push those a little bit, something a little bit a step above e-bikes. And then personally, I have a e-bike motorcycle thing. This may be in one of those gray areas because it has about 6,000 watts. And that's a lot of fun. And I also have had a chance to ride a Zero motorcycle. There's some other motorcycle brands I'd be very interested to try out. I used to ride motorcycles all the time, and I don't have one at the moment. And I'm very tempted, honestly.
Shame on you, man.
To get another electric motorcycle or another motorcycle at some point. It's right now. You talked about the price differential. Electric motorcycles are still quite a bit more expensive, right? So that's absolutely the only thing, honestly, that's holding me back, because I'm like, well, I could go buy a Honda that's really nice, or I can spend twice as much on an electric bike with kind of the similar specs. And even though I'm that much into electric vehicles, it's still hard for me to spend that much extra money on it. You know, so I'm very patiently watching and waiting, and don't be surprised if, you know, I get an electric motorcycle in the future. I do have an electric car, so, you know, I'm working on it, but
Come on, which one do you have?
So I had a Chevy Spark EV first, which is a tiny little hatchback of a car.
Yes, yeah. I know it. Yeah.
And then after that, upgraded a little bit to a Chevy Bolt. So that's what we've got right now. Didn't go the Tesla
Bolt
route.
And Chevy Bolt. Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's the other thing. I've been so tempted to like change the badge on it to say Bolton, but I haven't done it.
Just get some Sharpie the O-N.
I don't think my wife would approve of that modification.
I'm sure.
No, well, mine doesn't approve of many things, but we still get done. Oh, good. Okay, so you're a Chevy guy.
I am a opportunity guy of taking what's the best value, and the time that
you're
I was
a thrifty guy,
exactly. At the time I was shopping, it was kind of like, you know, that honestly in the U.S. at the time, that was a really great deal for the range that they have and the price that they're at. You had to spend, you know, $10,000-$15,000 more to get any other car with the same range that it had. So it just seemed like a no-brainer value-wise that was the best value for an electric car at the time. I can get a little too over-analytical in my number crunching and everything, but that was like the best.
No, please do. I'm just about to ask you, actually, because we don't often cover, well, I don't think we've ever covered Chevrolet. Have we covered Chevrolet?
No,
I don't think we have. No,
I think it'd be the Opel Ampera is the equivalent model over there. They don't call it the
Opel. Opel is European. We don't call.
You don't call anything Opel there. Oh, sorry.
No,
insulting.
No, another change again. It is a little. No, it's fine. we call it Vauxhall over here.
Okay.
And Vauxhall is Opel in Europe. And I think they've stolen a couple of Chevrolet models, but I think they are still operating independently of each other as well. So I'm sure I'll be corrected on that one. But actually, going back and asking you to do our jobs for us a little bit, can you give us just a quick headline on the Chevy Bolt? Insofar as what is the range? What's the power? What's give us the lowdown?
Sure. The rated range is 238 miles based on whatever U.S. standards we have for range. I know it's different around the world, but I know.
Yeah, we have the honest one. You guys have the lying one. Yeah.
So my experience, I've had a lot of people, you know, are like, oh, like, you know, that's not too much range. You can't really go anywhere. So I've already told you how far it is down to, you know, Hollywood. I bought the car in Los Angeles in Southern California, and on a business trip, I flew down, bought the car because the dealer had a much better price than my local dealer. And I had some business for a couple days down there. And the hotel I was staying at had a charger in the parking garage. So perfect. And I left, and basically my first trip with it was driving about 750 miles home. And I had to stop.
Good Lord.
I had to stop three times for about 45 minutes each to kind of charge up a little more and keep going. And when you're driving,
that's very reasonable.
Yeah, when you're driving 750 miles, typically you're not going to drive that full distance in one shot anyway. You're going to have to stop for gas at least once in most cars. And you might stop for lunch or something. So it, in hindsight, like, yeah, did it take me longer than driving a gas car? A little bit, maybe like an hour at most. But, you know, I plugged in, walked to a local store, bought some snacks, you know, get back to the car and, you know, get on my way to the next stop. It really wasn't bad at all. So the car itself, for me, seems like it drives great. You know, it's zippy like most electric cars are. It's not anything like like earth shattering, but it's quick. You know, you can hop on the freeway and get up to speed nicely and everything.
Can you get a bike in it?
Yes.
Good question.
It's a little tight. I will say the interior space on the Bolt is not its strong point. I have, you know, a wife and two kids, and we all fit in there just fine. But the trunk space is a little bit short because it's kind of a small, short hatchback, and there's not a whole lot of room in the trunk when you have four people in it. And then the other thing that it's missing, which is kind of weird, like normally where you'd have an engine, you have the electric motor and stuff, and there's no frunk at all. So there's no storage space up front.
Right.
They just... Yeah, forgot that conveniently.
Frunk. I love that. I've never heard it described that way in the UK ever. That's a brilliant Americanism right there.
What do you call it? It can't be the bonnet, right? It's a
the front boot.
The front.
Yeah,
it's the fruit.
Yeah,
then.
Or the front compartment. It's the fruit. Absolutely,
the fruit.
You've got a frunk. We've got a fruit. brilliant. I'd say the front compartment. I think more than anything else. It's the I mean, that doesn't really work, does it? The front compartment.
So I will say that's
a hell of a mouthful.
Yeah, I will say I had some advantages being in California because sometimes California has some pretty steep rebates for buying electric vehicles that other states don't get. So there was like, you know, a $4,500 rebate from the state of California if you bought an electric car.
Oh, wow.
Sometimes there's an $800 rebate from a electrical utility company if you bought an electric car. Like, why is the utility company giving you a discount for using less more electricity? I don't know. I don't understand. But they do. I know when we got the Spark, like, Bosch was offering a $500 rebate towards a charger, which their cheapest charger was less than $500, so it's kind of like free. So I looked at all those things, you know, and it's like, whoa. And then there's tax credits from the federal government, and I'm like, well, if you add all these things up, then the price is actually comparable to buying a small new car. You know, you just have to be mindful of, you know, what rebates and tax incentives there are, and then it actually pencils out pretty well. So that's one of the reasons I went up buying that car, is because we could take advantage of some of those things at the time as well.
Oh, I love it. I mean, we do have some grants over here, to be fair. And one of the things that we have, and maybe you had it as well, which is why Bosch were able to give you the rebate, is we don't call them rebates over here particularly, but there's a grant over here for having home chargers installed. They'll reduce the cost by around about, I think it's £400. So around £600.
Yeah, so that's pretty similar.
Yeah, very similar. So Bosch were probably being paid that $500, or they were probably being paid $600 actually, and now, rebating you $5.
Now I have to tell you a funny story because I just remembered it with the Spark, the first electric car I got. The dealer had no idea what they had. right. You know, I go there. There's fast charging, which is an option on the Bolt. I don't know why you would ever not want fast charging. They should just. It's like the battery thing. Get rid of the lower option. You don't need that. Just put it on all of them.
Maybe they did that
now. I don't know. But I remember going to the dealer, and the fast charging on a Spark was normally like a $750 option. They didn't have it on their paperwork. I didn't mention it. you know, hey, you're going to give me the fast charging car for the same price? Sure.
Yeah,
I'll take it.
You know, I asked, "Oh, do you know how do I apply for this rebate on the Bosch charger?" And they're like, "What's that?" I'm like, "You don't know what that is?" And then I was like, "Oh, what about this? You know," or they were trying to sell me one dealer tried to like sell me a slightly used car, and I'm like, "Well, I don't want the used one because you know it's a couple thousand less, but then I don't get the $4,000 rebate, so then it actually costs more." Yeah. And they're like. Are you sure that's a thing? Is that real? Like, they didn't know anything about anything.
So their main selling points they didn't have.
Yeah, they did. They had no idea what they were selling. And then to top it off, like as I'm filling out paperwork, like one of the employees walks by. He's like, "Oh, okay, you're getting the Spark." Like that still has an engine, right?
Oh my!
I'm like, okay.
The name gives it away.
I was like, "Well,
it has an engine. It's called a motor."
Yeah. So it just it really opened my eyes to how little the knowledge was on electric cars. And this was about 3.5-4 years ago, but I was like, wow, that's where everybody's at right now. Okay, that helps. Mm-hmm. So I'm always more than willing to talk about, you know, electric vehicles and cars and share information because I'm like, I think more people would do it if they just knew they existed. And I actually had this conversation with a business mastermind the other day. I, you know, told somebody I sell electric bikes and they're like, "Oh, wait, I got to ask the question, like, what is an electric bike?" They didn't even know.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, I thought everybody knew that electric bikes existed at least, but there literally are people that have no idea that electric bikes even exist, don't know what they are. So it just, you know, the adoption for cars and bikes and all that to me is just a sign that it has a lot of room to grow. When some people don't even know they exist.
Yeah, well, I think unless you're living under a rock, it would be difficult to not know. The electrification process is well underway now, isn't it? And I think we're all seeing that it's, whether we like it or not, it's the future, isn't it? And most people do like it, to be fair, particularly when they've tried it. They go, that was brilliant.
Yes. That's...
Certainly over here, people are totally anti-electric until they try it, and then they don't really understand what combustion engines were all about. You know, those noisy, smelly, ugly things.
I would think as soon as they see the prices you have for fuel over there, that would be a motivator.
Yeah, fuel's not cheap, or petrol as we call it.
Yes, I tried that a couple times while we were talking. You know, I threw that in there.
I did notice. I did as well, actually. I was going with it. I don't know that many Americanisms, so I'm not going
to
try.
I love as well how Kyle said gas first, but then he switched it to petrol.
I realized. Yes, I thought. Yeah. You're probably wondering, what is that? What are you saying?
Yeah. Well, it really confuses me when you say gas, because gas over here is gas, which is a totally different thing altogether.
Yeah,
to fuel or petrol.
It's not a liquid.
Yeah, exactly. So fuel, I can get that, but gas, I do have to run the conversion in my head a little bit and go, hold on, no, he actually means the liquid fuel type.
Yes, not... I don't understand it. That's just what we say.
Absolutely. Well, but either way, we all know it. It's well established. But yeah, no, it's extraordinarily expensive here. But to be fair, electricity's not terribly cheap over here.
Right.
You know, it's much cheaper. I mean, to just to give you an example, to get 200 miles of range in a car, your average car would probably be, I don't know, maybe 10 litres of fuel. No, I'm 8 litres of fuel, let's say, which would cost you about £12 to fill up. And so around $15 to fill up. To get 200 miles of range out of a vehicle, you'd probably need 15 kilowatts of power, maybe 25. On a small car, so you'd be paying maybe £3 or $4.50, $5. So yeah, it's about a third of the cost.
That's pretty significant.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. But people don't factor that in. You see, when they're looking at the cost to run these electric vehicles, and I don't see any really good calculators out there that are informing the masses that actually, yeah, you know what, these things are pretty expensive. But geez. You know, when you look at the overall total cost of ownership, there's a major difference.
Right. Yeah. It's in the long run, it makes sense. And if batteries, you know, actually do a million miles and these kind of things, like, you know, Tesla and other companies are talking about, then in the long run, they'll be much cheaper to maintain. So it'll be really interesting.
You'd hope so. Yeah. With lower maintenance costs as well. Right. Okay. Well, thank you very much for coming on, Kyle. It's been really, really interesting to get to know a little bit more about you and the things that you're doing right now. We are back next week. We're going to be talking about the state of micromobility in the UK, which is going to be a very different conversation altogether, I'm quite sure.
Yep.
no Kyle Chittick's over here, unfortunately, although there are a number of very interesting individuals. Kyle, once again, thank you very much for coming. If you have anything else that you want to say right now, now's the time.
Well, thank you for having me. And if anybody listening is in the US, or even if you are around the world, just know that, you know, if you want more information, you can always go to boltonebikes.com. But lots and lots of videos and information on my YouTube channel and my podcast, all for free, that applies worldwide, no matter where you are. So just Bolton e-bikes on Google, you can find any of those.
Awesome. And we will, of course, post links up to all of the things that we've discussed, to Kyle's website, as well as his YouTube channel. So yeah, click the link, please do. It's great. I have looked at them myself. I'm not just trying to sell a pup here. I know that the quality of his videos are very good. So please do take a look.
Thank you very much, Kyle.
Thank you.
Cheers, Christian.
Cheers, guys. Bye now.